Today is Sunday, November 6, 2022. And I want to welcome everyone. We're starting a new week, and we have different tensions that we had a week ago. Everyone asks me to comment on the elections. I'll only say the following. The results are unbelievably good. There are many reasons why. And now we have to hope that our politicians will not argue with each other and form a government in dignity and treat each other with dignity. I can tell you today, if you're up to date on the news, you'll understand why I'm not impressed by Haredim, so-called, and Agudat Yisrael. They once again have set an example for hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of their followers to be false and deceitful. Agudah announced this morning that they're not taking any positions of Sarim. And this is a tragedy because we want people who are tzaddikim and care to be in a position to vote whether we're going to have transportation on Shabbat or chametz in hospitals on Pesach. But what they will take is Skan Sarim. So you see, when you become a Skan Sar, you're regularly the Sar. There's no Sar on top of you. Netanyahu understands what's happening. But you're fooling the world. You think you're fooling God. I don't become a Sar. I don't have responsibility for the Chilul Shabbos and transportation and Chinuch elsewhere. And in reality, you're just playing with words, and this becomes an education that the young people see. We can be deceitful, we can say half-truths, and I'm not impressed with Agudat Yisrael. I have to say that true to form, they already disappointed me right at the start. But we hope for the best, Be'ezrat Hashem. Okay, regarding last Monday, it was a moment in time, and I want to thank my Talmud Ben Turin, put it on YouTube, and you can get to it very easily. We've sent out links, but you don't need a link. All you do is type in YouTube, Mendelevich Rakefet, and you'll come up with the 40 minutes or 35 minutes that we interacted in class. I could spend hours dealing with the questions that I raised and be much deeper, but Old Chazon Lemoed. All right, now back here. Jack Levinstein asked me a question a while ago. There are 18 volumes of Mishnah Halachot, and you've gone through all of them. Why do you pick out what you pick out? Well, my answer is I pick out what's unique, what's different, what teaches us something. And we saw from the last two tshuvot the question of an ultrasound and the question of Metzitzah B'Keh, you see the Hasidic overtones. Halacha L'maisa, there's nothing in the world wrong with a sonogram. Lehefech, now Bizman Hazeh, we absolutely should do it because they do miracles when they see there's a problem. Sometimes they can operate while the child, while it's an embryo, and sometimes they're prepared when the baby comes out. But for a Hasidic person, he lives with the concept, my grandfather dressed in black, I dress in black. My grandfather didn't do sonograms, I don't do sonograms. They move very slowly. And that's Rabbi Nasha Klein. When all is said and done, and he shows so intricately that people want to know, and people want boys, and people want girls, and he goes into all the sexual knowledge that Chazal had, which is relevant until today, I'm told. There's nothing in sex that Chazal did not understand. And nevertheless, Boteach Vashem Chesed Yisov Avenu. The question that we dealt with the last week with, 1 second, that comes next. That's what we dealt last week. And the week before we dealt with sonograms. Metzitza B'Peh, if you go through the Pashtus of the Gemara, and I'm told that the Rav said this, so I'm not being machadish anything, the Pashtus of the Gemara is that Metzitza B'Peh, we discussed it, the Metzitza B'Peh is only for therapeutic reasons, for health. that the child, everything should heal properly. So if that's the case, Bizman Hazeh, Remititzah, Vepesa, Sakana, Lo Aleinu, with all the venereal disease and the AIDS, with the world in which we're living in, and the monkeypox also, I'm told, it's 99% with homos, not with people who are straight. So don't do Mitzitza Vepeh. Originally they used the gauze. Now we developed a pipette. There's so many simple solutions that would be helpful for the child and helpful for the mohel. But nevertheless, if you're a chassid, and this has gone on in New York, that the politicians have allowed Mitzitza Vepeh to continue because of the pressure of Baropak, Satma, Bavav, etc. But all right, we can understand when you come to the Soloveitchik family, a Litvak with a Soloveitchik mind is a little bit different than a Hasidic approach. Now, I want to go further, and today she is very interesting, very unique. It's halachically, I think if the Rav got the question, he'd look at you, Vasfah Shaila, what are you asking? I think if Rav Moshe got the question, he'd answer in one paragraph. But with the Chassidim, you'll see what I uncovered. And we're talking now, Chelik Yudalid, Siman Reish Aleph. And it continues, the real problem we're dealing with is Siman Ayin Bet. They don't want to say Siman Reish Bet because it's a rave. So, they don't want to say Reish Ayin Bet because it's Ra'av. It's not a good sign, so it's like Shnat Tietzach. I think I was born in Tietzach, December 37, I think works out Tietzach. Tietzach, what am I, a murderer? So Tietzach, they turned it around. So here too, Siman Ayin Reish Bet, that's the next Siman. But let me just give you the background here. And this tshuva is from 1995. It's also, when we have a date, it's so good because you can understand what's happening in the world. And the tshuva is to someone in Yerushalayim, Reb Avraham Zakai, who put out a book, Habayit HaYehudi. Put out this book, and evidently either Reb Menashe Klein knows him or he just corresponds with him, and he puts out a book on how to keep a home Jewish. So in the book, Reb Menashe Klein says, yes, you've raised many issues that go on today that really it's not against halacha, but it's against our tradition, against the way a Jewish home was from time immemorial. Now, what you're touching upon here, of course, is basic to our whole, I would say, interaction with the Enlightenment and the big world around us. And there's nothing, you can see it, the difference in various approaches. We're sitting in this room and we have people on the screen. And let's say, for the sake of argument, at this moment there are 15 people listening live. Look at the way we're dressed. No two of us are dressed alike. We're dressed colorfully. We're dressed like Western, like the Western world. We'll go to Yeshivat Chevron. Everyone is black and white, black and white. You will go to a Hasidic yeshiva. Everyone has a bekisha and a Hasidic dress and a Hasidic hat. You know, the hat. So many articles have been written how you can tell the chassan or what his loyalty is by his hat. So you see, these are three different ways that we've interacted. I have self-confidence. I'm perfectly happy to dress and act the way I act. I consider my Yirat Shemayim as good as anyone else in the world. Okay? Baruch Hashem. But part of the Litvish world, which Rakefet has given many lectures on, they've been taken over by the Hasidic world. When I learned in Lakewood, we all dress the same? Absolutely not. No two of us dress the same. When I learned in Lakewood, a black hat, only Reb Aaron wore a black hat. No one else. Yeah, we put a hat on for davening. It could be a baseball cap, a beanie, this type of hat, that type of hat. Even the mashgiach, Reb Nassim Wachtvogel, didn't wear a black hat because he had covered for a baron. I remember his hat in my time was brown. That much I can tell you, Eved Nemana. But you come to the Hasidic world, and this is where halacha carries over into the world of tradition. And there you get involved. The whole question that I spoke about last week with Rav Hutner's grandmother. This week you're wearing a shirt with stays. Next week already you'll be wearing brown shoes. And a month later I'll be sitting Shiva for you. And this is the challenge. And we face it. I don't want to dismiss it. In other words, it could be their seichel to wearing black and white. It could be their seichel to being a chassid, a portable ghetto, etc., etc. On the other hand, I'm very happy and very at ease, and I see my children and my grandchildren and my great-grandchildren. And Natan, I can tell you a big mazel tov. You should know the nachat I had Friday night. Avik is not listening. My great-grandson sat next to me and davened every word of me. A kid in third grade, right? He has big yichis. He's the Chatam Sefer Zanur Einikol. You understand? But what nachat, I told my daughter, you can't put a price on it. So, all right, we can argue from today to tomorrow. I would rather use the word dialogue. And you know what my answer is? The way you feel comfortable. No one can convince me I'm better than a chassid. No one can convince me a chassid is better than me. But it's the way that you feel comfortable. Tell me, Vic, you remember your uncle, Rav Snow, Chaim Berlin? How did he dress?
Gray hat.
Gray hat, okay. So yes. And when I learned in language, you know, no one can comprehend that today. There was no uniform whatsoever. Now, he makes one point here that should be well taken, and this is something that haunts us until today. And he makes the following point. You're writing about the way Jews lived through the last hundreds of years. We never did anything to create jealousy. We were always laid back. And all of you know, a book just came out, by the way, a two-volume set by Professor Rakova on this very topic. I don't know if you know who I'm talking about, Professor Ryan. He's my age. He's no youngster. And he's probably the leading person alive today in Mishpat Ivri. He was officially employed by the government, and all the judges would turn to him for sources. Again, Mishpat Ivri, let me just be very brief, because I could spend years on it. But what Mishpat Ivri means, Natan, it's not halacha. In other words, we bring in the rule in Israel is, this is in the code of law of the government, that if there are no sources, in other words, the judges don't know how to rule, the first place they should look next is in the Talmud and the rabbinic literature. In other words, because we follow here common law and British law and American law, but Mishpat Ivri means, Professor alone, if you read his volumes, Mishpat Ivri, you'll understand what I'm saying. Mishpat Ivri doesn't mean rule of pi halacha, but it means you take in consideration the classic sources. So one of the big problems is showing off. Here you have to make a wedding, you have I have one grandchild left to marry off. How big a wedding do you make? How fancy a wedding do you make? How big a band? You want to rub people's eyes out? In other words, what do you want to do? And this problem has haunted us. I can tell you, halacha l'maisa, and these are facts, and we'll come to it in the Monday class down the line, when Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin began. Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin was revolutionary. What do I mean it was revolutionary? Elliot, did you grow up in the Hasidic world? You know, my wife is on the one side a Belzer, on the other side it's a Meshbitzer, the Ruzhina dynasty. So you grew up in the Hasidic world. There were no yeshiva. How could you go to yeshiva? Imagine, here it's YU Torah. Everyone can listen. And I have to tell you that I've been good and bad. Good is I've saved many Haredim from throwing the baby out with the bathwater. I can show you emails. I just got an email this morning that warmed my heart. I wrote back, I thank you immensely, because not all the time is a Rebbe appreciated. And these people are not YU people. So from that point of view, I'm doing good. On the other hand, there's a number of people, Lakewood, Chabad, etc., they didn't know what Zionism was. Listening to the Shurim, they became religious Zionists. Many came in Aliyah. All right, from my point of view, that's terrific. But from, let's say, the point of view where they're coming from, that is bad. So that's why when you were a chassid, you were very hesitant to send your kid away to yeshiva. Imagine if you come from, let's say, Shlonim Chassidim, and they send you away to Volozhin, you become a Litvak. The family is upset by that. So this concept of a yeshiva didn't exist. When you wanted to learn, in every court there was a Rebbe, there was Shayurim, there was learning, there was a base medrash. Obviously, it's not as good as a formal yeshiva where you have 400 or 500 students learning in classes and rebbeim and, you know, skilled teachers. They didn't have that. It was desolatory, haphazard. So Lubavitch organized the yeshiva. They were among the first, but they were very successful. 1897 in Lubavitch, Yeshiva Tomchei Tamimim. And that was a real yeshiva. But 90% of the students were Chabad from the house. There were others that came and joined. Many of them became Chabadnikim because they heard that there were good Rosh Yeshiva there, good Malamdin, and it went on a very high level of learning. As I told you, the Ragged Shava came out of Tomchei Tamimim. All right. I told you the Zuba brothers. Remember I told you about the Rabbi Nassim Zuba? I'll never forget, the man was bucking shot. Natan, clean shaven. A smile on it. I sat with him on Batei Dinim. He, Rabbi Teitz, was the Avbeitin, yours truly, and Rabbi Zuba. And I told you, Rabbi Zuba once wrote a whole article permitting shaving. Could you imagine in Chabad what I'm going through with my Talmud? So the sixth Rebbe called him in, and this was his biggest boast. And it was confirmed by his grandchildren, who heard me say it maybe last year, etc. He said, "A shagitz binstu of a lerenin kenstu." That you're a shagitz, you permit shaving, but I cannot. You bring sources, you know how to learn. So you see, when Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin was organized, Elliot, you were in Poland at the time. Your father got all excited. A yeshiva for any type of chassid. It's not Lubavitch, it's not Druzhin, it's not Bells. It's open to anyone who knows 200 Daf Gemara by heart. That was their basic requirement. And it was revolutionary. So he raised the money. He actually traveled to what's YU today. You should know that he visited YU to see the dormitory, the dining room, because that was revolutionary. And he raised the money and he built this fantastic building. And he dedicated it with a mob scene, with a dedication, and the money spent. And there was criticism. Why? You tell me why. The first Luchot, do we have them? What happened to them? Moshe Rabbeinu broke them. The second Luchot, that's what lived on. What do Chazal say? When you over-publicize the first Luchot, Ramim v'kolot, it doesn't last. But when you do it quietly, that lasts forever. Natan, this is the issue they raised right here. It's a fascinating issue that today we show off. We boast. We want people to know what we've achieved in life. And I can tell you, Gerach Hasidus, time and again, the Gerer Rebbe ruled in a wedding, you can only serve three courses. That Klalim, Tanayim, you can only invite at least 200 people. There were all types of rules for the wedding, for the Sheva Bracha, that even the poorest person would be no different from the wealthy. And I can tell you, I was invited to a Sheva Bracha, the Gerer Rebbe's niece. She was a big Hasidah of mine. She's not alive. Such a great lady, Esther Vertica, Zichrona Tzadeket Levracha, great, great lady, Gerer Rebbe's niece, brilliant lady, with a little lady with a big shaitel, and only president of a bank, a genius in money. Her husband was a caterer, he wrote the Sfarim, but she was the, wow. So she picked me up. It's a whole story. It's not for now. But she saw through me. But she saw that Rakefet is worth something. Baruch Hashem. So I'm invited to a Sheva Brachas. I have to tell you, here in Israel, I never in my life, Malkin, what a meal. White glove servant. The works. That's where I met Reb Shol Alta. The breakaway. That's why I met the Pnei Menachem, the Gerer Rebbe's wife. So I asked her, Esther, you spent a fortune. All right, I know you have the money, but Gerer, she said, well, I made a deal with the Rebbe. Every dollar I spend on the Suda, I match it for Sfat Emet, for the yeshivas. So she spent $100,000. The yeshivas got $100,000. But this is a problem. And we live on with this problem. And you should know, when Corona, again, you weren't here, Natan, but 2 years ago, we were totally grounded. You know, you couldn't leave your house. And a wedding, I had a great nephew got married. It was in a park, and they were standing. It was on Rut Shevet, one of the first weddings like that. And they showed everyone standing 10 meters apart. It was unbelievable. People said, this is beautiful. You can't pull anyone's eyes out. So he makes the point that I absolutely agree with you, that we have to go back to the old standard. Halacha l'maisa, is it possible to go back to the old standard? You see, humans are humans. And we're out in the big world. Can we limit it? Do you want to serve a fancy wedding and you have just three courses? I don't know. I want to be Malamet Zchut and Klal Yisrael. But on the other hand, in good taste. And you should know that the Maram Lublin, Rav Meir Shapiro, was criticized, and he got up and gave a drasha that, yes, it's true that it's maybe not the best to do to make it publicly, but there's an advantage. There's a famous drasha based on the Gemara in Menachet, I believe it is. If I'm off with Menachet, it's in Zvachim, but I know it's in neither Menachet or Zvachim, I think it's Menachet. That when the first Torah was given, and there was Kolot and Ramim, the world was shaking. And all the intelligent Gentiles asked, what's happening? And they were told, God is giving a Torah to the Jews. The Jews have to civilize the world. There was an advantage to doing it publicly. And he said, we have to make clear to the world, this is 1935 more or less, we have to make clear to the world, we're Jews, we're here to stay. And look what happened 5 years later, 4 years later, look what happened to the building that he built, the beautiful building. It became the Gestapo headquarters in that area. And so there's a lot to be said, and Reb Menashe Klein agrees with the author, we have to cut back. On Siman Ayin Reish Bet, he continues and he says, he gives you the exact source from the book, page 182, etc. And he says, you make a very interesting point. Shekatav v'shem kamet tzadikim, she'im meviim basa besudak prit mila, Dava zeskula sheha ben yiyeh talmid chacham. All right, now let's talk for a minute. A Brit Mila, what is involved in a Brit? A Brit is a Mila, a Priya. Who says you have to have a Suda? All right, Minig Yisraelis, we have a Suda. I think Yomo asked me earlier today, can you make the Brit early in the morning and the Suda at night? Right, Yomo, shake your head. That's what you asked me, right?
We saw someone mentioned that Minhag...
Right, the letter, I'll quote it later. So, tell me, on Tisha B'Av, what do you do when there's a Brit Mila on Tisha B'Av? Sudas at night. So you see, there is a connection. You can, that's it, b'di'evet, in Tisha B'Av, we have no choice, but the Suda, all right, a Suda, what does a Suda mean? And here you come to our eating habits. And I can tell you the story, I think I alluded to it last time. I was a guest of the South African community. I was there for a month in Johannesburg and Cape Town and back to Johannesburg. In Cape Town, the head of the Beit Din and the Rav HaMachshir was my dear Talmud, Desmond Watzvi Meisels, Rabbi Meisels. Zichrona Levracha. It hurts, I've buried so many Talmudim. Tzvi was married to a student of mine, a Merzel from Boston, Shlomo Merzel's niece. She's my student, Michlala, and the postgraduate. And they married, and I used to give Tzvi hell. You're going back to South Africa. Anyway, you should know all their children live here, without an exception. But they went back, and his father was a doctor, and he became a very prominent rabbi. And when I was there in Cape Town, you know, he didn't know what to do for us. So he wants us to take us out for breakfast. What does it mean, take us out for breakfast? Meat. They have endless cattle in South Africa and they eat meat. It's unbelievable. Good meat around the clock. I said, Tzvi, we're not used to eating meat for breakfast. You grew up in South Africa. We'll come to your house for coffee and cake. That's all we generally have for breakfast. Forget about going out, coffee and cake. All right. Now, I can tell you something else very interesting, that in the big shopping center in Cape Town, no, not Cape Town, in Johannesburg, in Joburg they call it, there were four kosher restaurants, all types, milkshakes, fleishiks, high-class fleishiks, and you would look into the restaurants, at least half the people there were middle-class blacks. And I asked, why are they eating kosher? And the answer I got was very simple, that in South Africa they consider anything kosher to be healthier, that it's under supervision for kashrut and for cleanliness, because if it's not clean, it can't be kosher. And I'll tell you something else. In South Africa, every product that can get a heksha has a heksha. So I asked, why? And they explained to me, because to export, if they have a heksha, people all over the world will take it. If it doesn't have an heksha, people feel, oh, it's South Africa. Who knows how primitive it is? It's interesting what you see here. In the supermarkets in South Africa, what was overwhelming, tremendous kosher meat vis-a-vis two separate sections. And people told me the kosher meat may sell more than the non-kosher meat. The bakeries are all in the big suba, all entirely kosher. And you've seen the bakeries, milky parav. And I know, I mean, to a guy it probably doesn't matter. But someone who has a problem that they can't eat milk, it does matter. But it's all kosher. Unbelievable when you see this. So, we milkshakes, I go to a Brit. I've been to many Britak and Einhara. I'm not prepared to tell you how many great grandchildren, males or grandsons, males I have. I only had daughters, but God has a sense of humor. It took me 13 boys in a row to see a granddaughter. And I'm going to tell you, with the great-grandchildren, the grandsons outnumber the daughters 3-1. That's what it amounts to. Wow. So, who can eat meat in the morning? You go to a bridge and have milkshakes. What's the shaila? I've had Britot right across the street in the Rehov Shachal. The shuls, the big shuls there, Rehov, what is it, Reb Chaim, not Reb Chaim Halle, Reb Zev Gold, that connects to Reb Chaim Halle. Who can eat meat at 9 o'clock in the morning? No, it's a shayla. What, there's something wrong? What's going on here? And here you see that he quotes, he says, Kibalt, that he has a Kabbalah, the author of the Sefer, that in a Brit, if you eat meat, it's a skula for a Talmud Chacham. No, if your parents are not alive, I gather, no. Your parents asked them if you had meat or milk at the Brit, because if they say meat, it's a skula. No wonder you're a Talmud Chacham. No wonder you're learning for Smicha. But who heard? A Litvish Welt? I don't know. I can't envision the Rav eating meat at 9 o'clock in the morning. I don't envision it. The Rav Dafka drank a lot of milk because he had ulcers. And I don't know if they had this as advanced medicine 50, 60 years ago, but milk. He always drank a lot of milk for the ulcers. And I remember him getting shyless. This I heard very sadly. Someone, Rabbi Klavan, who was the executive director of RCA Yira, what an individual. The Rav had confidence in him. That was the Rav's right hand, Izzy Klavan. And the Rav would have never been what he became to the RCA if not for Rabbi Klavan. You follow me, Vic? Rabbi Klavan. It enabled the Rav to be the Rav in the RCA without any problems whatsoever. And so Izzy Lo Aleinu was undergoing treatment for cancer. Ultimately, it put him under. And you can hear him on a recording asking the Rav, he has to drink milk. And it's over an hour. The Rav said, 1 hour, that's all you know. The Meikadin, it's 1 hour. And the Germans, there are some Germans that only wait an hour, 3 hours. The 3 hours doesn't make sense, but all right, it's psychological. If not, it's 6, you follow me? And they drank milk, not meat. Ah, so he says, a Kabbalah, you'll be a Talmud Chacham. All right, now you see the Hasidic world come to light. And Rabbi Nasha Klein, without commenting, because it's obvious you don't have to have meat at a bris. Rav Nasha Klein says, I absolutely agree with you. And I have a Kabbalah. I heard a story on Eitzel Hagon HaKodesh Admo Mitzans Bal Divrei Chaim. This is Rav Chaim Halberstam. This is the sons of a Rebbe. Anyone who's Hungarian, I mean, again, you're already, I grew up, people mentioned the sons of a Rebbe. They were Reb Chaim Halberstam, they were shaking like we mentioned Reb Chaim, you understand? And he says, I have a Kabbalah, and he tells the following story, that a very important person came to the Rebbe, and he cried to the Rebbe, I have a house, I'm paraphrasing it word by word, Bayit Malei Torah, V'chol Banecha Limudei Hashem Gedolei HaTorah, and all my sons are Gedolei Torah, I have one son that doesn't want to learn, isn't a Ben Torah, and I have tremendous agmas nefesh and pain from this. All right, this is what he's asking the Chassidic Rebbe. You know how many times I've gotten questions like this? It's ein bayat asha ein sham. If you saw the David, you read, well, where I see it, a big, I might have been a Makari Shon, a big article on Smotrich and his brother. Smotrich with a beard and a kippah, and his brother, a big Chiloni Zionist who doesn't believe in Torah. Brothers, sons of a Rosh Yeshiva. Got it? You saw the article?
No, but I will.
It may be, it's not this week. It's a week or two ago.
Okay.
Whatever. I read, my daughter gives me, I look at all the weekend papers to look, know what's going on. It doesn't mean I read everything, but you know the heaven. I get Mariv, I get Jerusalem Post, I get Makor Rishon, and I get Yisrael Hayom, or whatever they call it on Shabbat. I don't know, Yisrael Hayom, that may even be on Shabbat as well. So I'm not sure which one I read it in, but it seems to me Makor Rishon. And ain't by the same Shemek, no, when you, not time you're going to be in the rabbinate, you get this question, what do you answer? I'll tell you what I answer. Keep the channels of communication open. Don't yell, don't shout, don't be bitter, don't be caustic. Look into a guy named Rothkopf, did a doctorate on Bernard Rebel. Look into the response that he collected and what he writes about intermarriage and keeping the channels, Rabbi Rebel writes, but keeping the channels of communication open. You know what the Rebbe answered? And the great sons of a Rebbe said, took, you ever see a Chassidic Rebbe like this? And he strokes his beard and he's thinking and he closes his eyes. And then he opens his eyes and he says, Efsha hastu gimachta milchaka suda bein bris. Translation, maybe you made a milchaka meal at the brit. And the father starts thinking and the father says, Chashava av. And the father remembers when this kid was born, Hayaz Man Vubal. Something was going on in the house, something was going on in his business, he didn't have time to work it out properly. The Asu Milchikasuda. So the sons of Rav says to him, Vas Viltstu. If you made a Milchikasuda, this is the result. The kid doesn't want to be a Talmud Chacham. The kid doesn't want to learn. Elliot, I challenge you to find a Litvisha Pesek who would paskin like this, who would answer like this. But this is Chassidus. Now, so Rav Menashe Klein understands that Rav Kepler is going to poke fun and say our Litvisha would never paskin like that. He already finds a source. Shmot Yudchet, Pasuk Yudbet, Vayikach Yitro Chotein Moshe, Ole Usvachim Lelohim, Vayov Aaron, Vachol Ziknei Yisrael, Leechol Lechem in Chotein Moshe, Lifnei HaElohim. And what are we talking about here? Here, look into the Ramban on Pasuk Yudbet, the Pasuk we quoted. Aval hayaza achashem madimechem yarim babim vinitgayer b'mila utvila v'hartzaat damim kamishpat. And look into Rabbi Chevel's commentary here. And he gives you more sources, and the way they learned the Pshat and the Chumash is that Yitro came and he was so impressed with Moshe Rabbeinu, with his daughter now, with his grandchildren, with the Jewish people, Vayishma Yitro, and he wants to convert, he wants to be part of the Jewish people, and he converts. And as part of the conversion, what do you bring? A ksudat mitzvah, karbanot, meat, and all the gedolei Yisrael, vayov Aaron, the kol siknei Yisrael, participated in this suda. So you see, if this is a suda of Geirat, then we're quoting the Ramban. This is the Ramban, this is gedolei harishonim, this is not Stam Dashanut, a suder of Geirut, you have to have meat. And therefore, this minhag, this tradition, is 100% correct. Meat, Talmud Chacham, Sudat Mitzvah, all that goes into it, and 100% in agreement with the Rav Zakkai writing the Sefer, 100% in agreement with the sons of a Rav. Okay? So this is one quote with the Ramban, and look into the footnotes. You'll see more sources among Achronim, particularly the Meshech Chachma. You have Yesham Milis Moch. And this is the continuation of the Tshuva. And then he says, quotes Rabbeinu Bachya, Hilchat Mila, Siman Chaf Dalet, Shekatav, Ki kishenolat Yitzchak mimol lechet yamim, v'yasa Avram sudar gedola b'yom chet lemina. And he quotes a drasha, v'yasa Avram mishtegadal b'yom higamel et Yitzchak. And what's the pshat? B'yom higamel? What did our Rebbeim teach us in first grade or second grade when we learned this? The Yom HaGamel, when he stopped nursing, when he already was mature, didn't need his mother to breastfeed him. The Yom HaGamel at Yitzchak, and the Darshanut here, HaGamel, Hey Gimel Mem Lamed. Hey Gimel, add it up, 8. 8 Mal. On the 8th day, he had a Brit Milah. B'yom higamel at Yitzchak doesn't mean after he stopped nursing. It meant on the day of the Brit Milah. Hey Gimel equal 8. Had Mal. Mal Milah. Brit Milah. What kind of Brit Milah did he have? Sudat Mitzvah. It's like a korban. It's like you're bringing a korban, and only meat can you bring a korban. And this explains the minhag, why Hasidim want meat. The sudat brit mitzvah, hi ka'achilat basa, ha'korban she'kohanim ochlim. Ubalim mitkat brim, and a sudat mitzvah, it's like a korban. A korban is mechaper. The suda has to have meat. It's mechaper, and therefore I agree with your suggestion that every brit milah has to be followed by a suda of basa v'kol. Okay, powerful, 100%. You think this is the only source? To me, it was a big chiddush. I can't remember a brit milah I was at where there was a sudat basa. But all right, maybe in the course of a lifetime. But I don't remember even on Tisha B'Av, I. Remember my nephew, Mitzad Malka's brother, my wife's brother, one of the boys, there was a brit on Tisha B'Av. And I remember the Suda was at night. But following Tisha B'Av, who's going to eat meat? Logically, it's too heavy, right or wrong? It was milchiks. Okay. Nothing in life is cheaper than it used to be. Natan, do you remember when the New York Times was 2 cents? I remember. 3 cents. The Sunday edition, I should say, which you needed, I would have to have Yomo carry it home for me. You know how much it was, Vic? 25 cents. Remember when it went up to 50, it was 40, 50. What is it today? $3 or something? Wow. $3 of propaganda. Anti-world propaganda. God should destroy the world. Anti-Jewish, etc., etc. Okay. What can you do? New York Times is the New York Times, and the outside of their opinions and the way they slant the news, there's a lot of interesting material there. Everything It's more expensive today. There's only one thing which is less expensive, and that's printing, putting out a book. I still remember my first book, if I recall correctly, the type was set by hand. Remember how they used to set it? All the letters, pick them out, put them. Unbelievable. Today you go to your computer, you have a PDF file, you print out a book. I saw an article in one of the Alonim, I believe it was. Again, I look at so much, I don't remember, but over the weekend, about a Gemara, that this person who couldn't learn a word and was the worst student ever, wound up in Mechaz HaRav and went on to become a first-rate Talmud Chacham, and he's putting out Shas, totally organized, colors, every kid can learn, captivates you. My wife said, what a colored Gemara, I want to see it. I went to the Google, I printed out the start of Megillah. I just told my wife, I'm coming home with a colored Gemara to show you. Different, unbelievable. Print is unbelievably cheaper today. When you publish, you're basically paying for the paper and the binding, not for the printing. Because print is cheaper, there are so many books available. Everyone publishes, including a dummy like Rakefet. It's cheap. I say that Kellett was opposed to it. Okay, Kellett was smarter than all of us. I didn't realize my words in class carry so much strength. I mentioned that last Monday, I think it was, that to put out a book, the end of days, that you know how it's going to happen. It's totally wrong. Quote the Rambam, Perek Yud Bet.
Quoting authentic sources, not telling when exactly.
Okay, anyway, to me it left an impression, this is the way it's going to happen. It's against the Rambam, period. And it's the Rambam, not just in Hilchot Malachim, it's the Rambam in Perish HaMishnayis, to Perek Chelik, the Hakdama. Okay. So Rabbi David told me, he got calls from America, how come you're giving out that book, The End of Days? All right, I didn't realize people that don't take me so seriously here. You see, Yomo says, what's wrong with it? It's quoting sources, all right. I think the Rambam also is quoting sources, but we'll leave it be.
It's quoting now, Chazal, and it has comments from Gedolei Yisrael.
Say that we've accepted. I've made fun of myself, relax. Agudat Yisrael also has, what they spoke about this morning, also has authentication from Gedolei Yisrael. So bear that in mind. All right, so I uncovered, I couldn't believe it, there are endless beautiful volumes. It must be 10, 11 different volumes, hundreds, thousands, ultimately, might even be tens of thousands of pages on the Hasidic world. The book, and one of the books, Otze Pinimi HaChasidut Im Otzrat Geone Hadorot. And this entire volume is on Brit Milah, put out by Machon Ol Yesharim in Yerushalayim, and Nahariya has two branches. And I couldn't believe my eyes. They don't call Rav Menashe Klai, but what a Hasidic overtone to a Sudat Mitzvah. First of all, let me quote a Gemara that we'll quote later again. Shabbat Kuf Lamed Amid Aleph. Very beautiful, insightful Gemara. Kuf Lamed Amid Aleph. Tanya Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer. Kol Mitzvah Shekiblu Aleichem B'Simcha Kamo Mila Dechtiv Sasa Nochi Alim Ratecha Kemotzei Shalom Rav. Pasuk in Tehillim, Kuf Yutet, the famous Perek. Adayin al sin al tam v'simcha. V'kol mitzvah shekiblu aleim b'ktatar. Kimo araya tektiv ayishma moshe et ha'am bochel mishpachatam. Alis kei mishpachot adayin al sim al tam b'ktatar. The leka ktuva the loramay b'tigra. What a fascinating Gemara. Let me explain it. That the mitzvahs that the Jews accepted b'simcha, they still do b'simcha today. And Brit Mila, a prime example. David, how do you know why b'simcha? All right, they quote a pasuk. Look into Rashi. B'simcha she'osin mishter. That they make a suda. Wow. No, Elliot, what's the secret of a shul? How did they open up in Hamptons? How did my Talmud, Rabbi Mark Schneier, build an Orthodox shul with a mechitza from May through September? They have to hire tremendous tents. Shabbos morning, 800 people. I don't say 800 people are from. But they come to daven, it's a sight to see. David, there's a breakaway already. The people who are not, you know, Mark is a character. And the people are, you know, in his minion, if there are 800 people, maybe 200 are Shem Shabbos. They already have a shtibble down the block. But you got to give Mark credit. He did, and everyone agrees. With all, you know, with all criticisms, only he could have done this. So, what was the secret? Following davening a kiddush like the Waldorf Astoria serving you. Aleph, Aleph. My student in Tel Aviv, out working in outreach right off the beach. What's the secret? Friday night, beautiful kiddush. Shabbos morning, beautiful kiddush. The people are flocking there. Not all are from, but some people became from. You have to give credit. So, Chazal, look at Rashi. Big simcha, big meal. When a riot, bochel mishpachatav. Yomo, I want you to go to North Tel Aviv and set up a stand and preach that men and women can't have relations together sexually until they are married. B'kedusha, b'tar, and taret mishpacha. They'll rip you apart. They'll pour the feathers out of you. They'll pull them out of your beard. They heard a riot. They're crying. Bochel. Oh, what a Gemara. Okay. Bear this Gemara in mind. I'm now quoting from page Tarchat, Tuf Reish Chaf Dalet. Oy, Gaya Kufre, this is 624. This is on Miller alone. I think there are 900 pages in the book. And it talks about the Shin of a Rebbe. Who is the Shin of a Rebbe? Rebbe Cheskel. No, Halbishtam, that was the most famous son of Reb Chaim that we just quoted a minute ago. And the Shin of a Rebbe said that when you have meat, it at a Brit Mila, mashpia lechit patkuto haruchanit shel hayeled, and you'll see if someone is a gadol b'Torah, gadol in learning and knowledge in Yirat Shemayim, you know that at his Brit Mila, they served meat. And now he tells a story, this is contemporary, from the B'nai Menachem that yours truly met and spoke with him. That was with the Baron Soloveitchik. And at the Brit, the Professor Tarigan, here's this person, Shayurim, Rabbi Daniel, the Pnei Menachem's son, gives Shayurim in Sharei Chesed. And at the Brit of Rabbi Daniel's son, so the Pnei Menachem spoke, and he told the story. a Jew came to Rabbi Cheskel Mishinava and cried to him that his son went off the path. The Shinova Rebbe said, you know why he went off the path? That you didn't do a Suda at the time of his Brit Milah. The Jew looked at the Rebbe and said, yeah, me'am yagatan a Suda, we did make a Suda. And he checked it out, and he remembered it was a Milchik a Suda, not a Fleishik a Suda. And the Rebbe said, this is why you have the problem. And the Shin of the Rebbe is quoted, Da, ki achilat masa b'chema b'brit, m'chazek et ha'emuna. And this is why your son has left the path. And he quotes further, the Shinova quotes the Tam Baruch, the reason the reform movement began in Germany, Mipnei shehipsiku lasot sudah shel basa bebrit vehechlifo besudat chalav. And could you imagine? This is why the reform movement began in Germany. They abolished having meat at a sudat brit. Then he quotes on the second column the Ribnitzer. The Ribnitzer, no, this is in the news here. The Ribnitzer was the Romanian Rebbe who was Meisa Nefesh to help. What are you saying?
Wasn't he in Russia?
He was under the communists. No, I don't think he was in Russia. He was in Romania. And it could be, but later that part was overwhelmed by Russia. But I believe originally he was in Romania, but you may be right. But he was under the communist, what this man was, Meisa Nefesh. And then they got him out, they took him to America. Why are we seeing the news here, Elliot? Because Lieberman, with his terrible hatred and enmity for Haredim, says, I have a Rebbe, the Ribitzer, he quotes this Rebbe, Avat Yisrael, yeah, he quotes Avat Yisrael, but there was much more to the Rebbe. What about Shabbat, Kashrut, Tarat Mishpacha, Talmud Torah, Gidul Banim, B'Ahava, B'Yira, and this was in the news too, who gives you the right to quote the Azad Tzadik, the Ribnitzer, and you take only from him the Avat Yisrael.
And he also is Messiah, he's a stolen Rebbe.
He what? He
also Messiah, he's a stolen Rebbe.
Who is Messiah, he's the stolen Rebbe?
The Lieberman.
Lieberman, okay.
I saw that. It myself when I was at the Shabbat.
Okay, sorry. Halavai, they would have a little hashpa on him. But here, this is already in America, in Borough Park. I hope it wasn't that your Brit he's describing this. The Ribnitzer describes that he was the Mol, he was a Mohel, that's something he had to do under the communists, he continued in America, and I was the Mol for a very wealthy family. And they made Sudah Gedolah, spent a fortune, Shulchan Malachim in Kol Madei Olam, nothing was missing. And the waiters, the River Times Divine, this is in Borough Park, the waiters had white gloves on their hands. Vic, can you tell me where else there's a description of white gloves? 1883, Cincinnati, the Reform Treif Banquet. The lights, candles all over, and the waiters with white gloves serving the shrimp cocktail. And but in Batei Yadayim Levanim, that's the rabbinic expression for gloves. Batei Yadayim. You'll see it in rabbinic literature. Vasuda berov v'yofi kachat hachatunot hagadolat. And when they came back from the simcha, the Rebbe said, how can it be that a man that is so wealthy and lacks for nothing would not do a Sudat Brit Mitzvah. And the Gabbai, his Gabbai, looked at him and said, Rebbe, there was a tremendous meal there. What are you talking about? And the Rebbe answered, yes, there was every type of food, every type of luxury, every type of madanei olam. Ulam basa lo hayashem. Usuda balo basa einena suda. And when there's no meat at a sudat mitzvah, this is not a sudat mitzvah, a brit milah.
Excuse me?
No, I got to tell you on Shavuos how many different minhagim there are. There are people who eat milchiks, wash again, clean out their mouths, eat bread, and then have a big fleishik meal. Listen, what can I tell you? I know a guy named Rakefet. If he is home, he never has meat on Shabbos. What do you want? It's open halacha, but on the Sudat and the Shavuos already, there are reasons why they couldn't. Kasha didn't know all the laws yet. There was no time, so they had to stick to milchiks. But now we know that there's a whole movement on now, vegan. Rabbanim are writing, the Palestinian Post or the Jerusalem Post, whatever it's called today, many articles on vegan, Baruch Hashem. All right, and now he tells a story with the Kreshnitziv Rebbe. If I'm not mistaken, he's in Rehovot, and this is a story about his father. And they describe the father who went out of his way when he went to a simcha and halavai meat, and he would participate, and he would be overjoyed. And he would quote the Gemara I quoted before from Shabbos Kuf Lamed Omer Aleph, that the biggest simcha of the Brit Milah is the Suda. People are overjoyed. There's a meal, and everyone can eat, and the poor can eat, and meat. And this is the secret, that the main part of the Brit Milah is the Suda. And to have meat shows you want to Ratzono ma'av yav l'kayei mitzvat Hashem yitbarach b'simcha. And the Kreshen Rebbe would speak u'mukubal mitzadikei yesodei olam, that if you just serve fish at a meal, your son will be a yereshamayim. If you say meat at the meal, in addition to fish, muftach shebenoze gam yat mid bulimur hatorah. And it goes on and on to describe how important it is to have meat at the Brit Milah. I mentioned coming attractions last week about meat at a meal, and I got the following email today from a dear Talmud. Rebbe, concerning your comment about making a fleishik of Brit, my wife, as you may recall, is a Bukharan Jew who grew up in the old country. They used to make fleishik meals at their Brit celebrations. Interestingly, they used to have the Brit in the evening for two reasons. In other words, the Brit Milah would be right after Mincha, right before sunset, and then they would have a Brit Milah, a big fleishik meal. What are the two reasons? One reason is applicable even today in Mal Adumim. The other reason, Baruch Hashem, is not applicable anywhere right now. The first reason, people could more easily eat a lavish fleishik meal in the evening. The second reason, the KGB would snoop around if the large meal occurred in the morning. Now, I mentioned before, where is his wife from? Bukhara. Bukhara and Georgia, that area, there was practice of Jewish life 100%. Stalin wanted to knock out the shoes in Georgia. By the way, he was born there, and he was Christian. Once they were Christian, am I using the right word?
Baptized.
Okay, I'll use that word. And he had a pious mother, and when they came to destroy the shoes, the Jews lay down on the street and said, "You have to kill us." And they didn't go that far, and shoes remained there. So why are they coming, snooping around? The issue wasn't the religious celebration. The issue was where the money was coming from. By having the meal in the evening, they somehow avoided this issue. So fascinating. So you see, look what happens here. When their sons were born, his wife arranged a lavish, fleshic, bris celebration in the evening. Who was the mole? One of the leaders of Agudat Yisrael in Chicago. Although the mole, Rabbi Shmuel, first reminded me that a brit should be early in the morning, my wife strongly felt that the fleshic meal aspect overcame the need for zrizut. You know what zrizut means, because Avraham Avinu, Vayashkim Avram Baboka, Zrizim Makdimim. And here's a line, Yomo, that's very important for you. And I knew better not to pursue the matter further. So, all right, we've taken, I apologize, I admit it's not an earth-shaking question. To me, what is the Shaila? If I'm going to go to a Siddur at 9 o'clock in the morning, 10 o'clock in the morning, I want milchiks. But you see, the Hasidic overtone, the Bukharan overtone, and there's something to be said for it. A beautiful Sudam in Est, it's a Brit Mila, it's like a carbon. The meat is machaper, gives you strength. Poor people can have a good meal. It's like weddings. What was the minhag with weddings? Remember my lectures, Vic, 30, 40 years ago, in the Friday night, the Ramawis Masada Kedushin, 10 o'clock at night, no, Tshuva Kaf Kaf Hei, the Bach HaChadah, we find it also. Why was the minhag Friday afternoon weddings? So the Suda would be a Suda for everyone, the Sheva Brachas, and even the poor people would have a good meal. And this is Chassidus, this is Rav Asher Klein. He can't asa a meal that's milchiks, but better, 1,000%. The Shinova, the Sansova, the Gera, everyone, 1,000% better. But now we go a step further. Meinyan linyan beoto inyan, the Hasidic world. And here you come to a tshuva that is unbelievably fascinating, and I throw out the challenge, if someone would want to do a master's, a doctorate, it's also from 1995, it's Chelek Yud Gimel, Mishnah Halachat, Chelek Yud Gimel, Siman Kuf Lamed Gimel. Who is this talking about? What's happening here? And let me give you a little background. Bididi Havayuvda. Let me tell you a story that happened to me. All of you know, or you should know, if you read my work on Washington, or if you read the volume that came out of the life of Rabbi Dr. Bernard Lander, when I almost finished my coursework for my doctorate, so Pearl Cotton, Zichrona Levracha, she was the recorder, it was called, gave her a special title because she really ran Bernard Revel Graduate School. She was a crippled widow, but what a lady. And Mrs. Cotton said to me, Pearl Cotton, "Arnold, do you have a topic for your doctorate yet? Or are you going to be like the other rabbis that finish the coursework and never do their doctorate? They get too busy." So I said, "You know, Mrs. Cotton, make me a meeting with Dr. Lander." He was then the head of the graduate school. He couldn't be called dean because he had a full-time job at Hunter College. But he was called director, whatever it was. I think director, maybe another title. So she makes the appointment, and I prepare an outline I want to write on the Netziv. And I come in with my outline, my proposal, it's called. And Dr. Landa looks at it and says, "All right, Donald, I'll show it around. I'll call you back in about 2 weeks. I get a note, Dr. Landa wants to see me, make an appointment. And Bernie Landa says to me, and changed my life, and says, "Arnold, your proposal is nice." By the way, in brackets, it was later done by a lady at the Hebrew University, did a doctorate on the Netziv. So close the brackets. And he says to me, "Your proposal is nice, but we've been looking for someone to do a doctorate. It has to be a very unique person who knows how to learn and can do a doctorate on the founder of Yeshiva, Bernard Revel." And the rest is history. I don't want to go further. But now, I've been assigned. You found it? Yashikayach, you did a chesed. The doctorate was assigned, and I start my work. Now, the committee of the doctorate, one of my granddaughters who just submitted her doctorate to Hebrew, so she tell me that it's the person she does it on, they call them, I think, two readers, or two, there's a different word they use, but it's not a committee. In my time, it was called a committee. Dr. Grinstein was chairperson, because it's an American Jewish history, and the other two members were Abe Duker and Sidney Honig. So Sidney Honig calls me over, and two things he told me. "Arnold, I never want you to embarrass the yeshiva. You may find material on the scandal of Dr. Dean Sapphire, 1935. That can't be published. And you may find scandal on the Siddiq Rebbe's son, or Siddiq Rebbe, who's going to jail. You should know, that can't be published. The first papers I found, I can give you day by day on the scandal. I can do a Hollywood movie. I could be wealthy enough to buy and sell Grist Campus. You follow me, Vic? But Kvod Hashem Hasteh Davar. The second papers I found, very simple. A Chassidic Rebbe, son of a Rebbe, was going to jail. This is the 1930s. And he was petrified. The rules were in jail. Everyone has to shave. I don't know, they were worried you might hide a bullet in your beard. Today, I imagine in the jails, everyone has a beard today because you do your thing. I see half the people who run the world and set the public concepts, etc., anti-Semites, progressives, laugh at any sexual standard, they all have beards. Can I hurry? They're all firm with beards. So Rabbi Revel wrote a letter to the judge or to the parole officer, whoever, someone had influence. I found the letter, why a beard is so important to a Hasidic Jew, and he should not be required to take his beard off. All right? I never published it. It's long since gone and forgotten. Someone should do research in 1995. Go through the English papers, the New York Times, the Daily News, go through the Yiddish press, go through Jewish press. A son of a Hasidic Rebbe was going to jail. And evidently it was a white-collar crime. Why am I so sure it was a white-collar crime? White-collar, am I right? That means money, things like that, right? Not what I call the other blue-collar, a serious crime, murder, robbery. But this, how do I know? David, how do I know it was a white-collar crime? Because you see, one of the things Rabbi Menashe Klein suggests is that he should be able to invite a fellow chassid to spend Shabbat with him in jail. They should fabring on Shabbat. Now, I don't believe in a penitentiary that's possible, but with white collar crimes, it's low security. These are people that, you know, they feel they can trust, that they're not going to run away. Money is money, you know. Chazal already say that there's no one alive who didn't sin with money, all right? There's a lot of truth to it. Who knows, the money we're paid, even Yomo gets a salary from Yeshiva University, is he allowed to take that salary? Maybe part of the salary is donated by Chilul Shabbos, money that was made in Shabbos. You follow me, Vic? There was just the story of a yeshiva boy who inherited millions, and it was from an uncle who was Mechalel Shabbos. And he asked the Shaila, and he was told, that was on all the websites here, on the Sheva, it was on the Yeshiva World News, I saw it, all right, I don't know. But they passed him correctly, I don't know. Because I know the halacha is that if Goyim want to give tzedakah, you have to take. If Goyim want to bring a korban, the tefillah of Shlomo HaMelech, you have to take. You have to give them a schud. If a Mechalel Shabbat wants to give tzedakah, let him at least have the mitzvah of tzedakah, even if he has the mitzvah of Shabbat. You follow? But all right, this money, some of it may have been made. How much could be made on Shabbat? It's only 1 cent, a seventh, it's bottle. Yesh Breira, you can come up with many svara, give to tzedakah, what you chayshish, 1/7, give it to a yeshiva, give it to tzedakah, give it to the kollel you're learning, all right. So I can't believe that in a regular prison you can invite a guest, but with this low security, it makes some sort of sense to me. That's why I say it had to be a white-collar criminal. Now, they turn to Rav Menashe Klein to explain what it means to be a chassid and what is important. And I have to say that, forgetting about the circumstances in which it's asked, it's a beautiful paper on chassidus. And with my litvish mind, I tell you, while he's not explaining it the way I would, it accentuates the difference between the Hasidic world and the world of pure halacha, litvak. It's a world of difference between us. And let me another word. Why did they turn to Rav Menashe Klein? He's writing to a lawyer. I'm sure that this lawyer doesn't give the name. He just says, L'malat kvota orech din shalom uvracha. This lawyer has to be the lawyer of the person going to jail. This lawyer already, either he himself is learned or he has access in Borough Park. They're going to hire someone to translate what Rav Menashe Klein writes. Why Rav Menashe Klein? Because here you have a personality who is integrated on the Brooklyn scene. He was not unknown to politicians and judges. And, you know, his background, and he knew English perfectly. Here was a man who survived the hell of the Holocaust. Here is a man who is looked up to by Elie Wiesel. In other words, he was a persona that the people in the legal system could relate to. And this is why I think they turned to Rav Menashe Klein. And I'm going to show you a very fascinating source. We'll end off the class with it. But he begins, again, I'm paraphrasing his Hebrew. I was asked to explain the special laws that apply to a chassid who is a direct descendant of the Baal Shem Tov HaKodesh and continues the tradition that this family is unique. It continues all the traditions of the Hasidic world Muvdalim umefarashim mikol am beprishut v'chashidut. And you see, this Rav Shekline here is explaining, this doesn't apply to Rakef, it doesn't apply to Rashna, but this is a Hasidic Rebbe, a son of a Rebbe, big yichus. What is unique about Hasidus? What must he keep? What must he observe that most Jews mainstream don't observe? And here he quotes the Gemara, and I worked hard to try to see if his interpretation is correct with Menashe Klein. Could be he's right. He quotes a Yerushalmi in Kedushin, Perek Aleph Halacha Hey. And it's right, it's on the 7-volume edition of the Yerushalmi that I have. It's on the bottom of the page, Tet Zayin Amid Aleph. And it talks about Minig Yisrael, that they used to buy a field, and they would buy in a certain way. Hayu krovav mevin chaviyot mamalim lam tam kloyot vegozim vishomrim lefnei atinokat vanitokat mitlaktim viomnim niktsats ploni meachuz hato. And a person was selling his personal possession, the land he inherited from his father. And they wanted the world to know how bad he was, how bad he felt. And they would give out what we would call today candy nuts and give it out to the children and break it in front of the children. And that was a symbol that he's breaking with tradition, he's breaking with his parents, he's breaking with his precious possession. His field. It was maybe people should come and help him. Maybe they could put up money. Maybe they could redeem it. Maybe it's just sharing in his sorrow with him. And b'shashai magzirim lo, and when they would return the field, when he had the money, when he could buy it back, hayu al simkach, the same thing. The Omrim Chazar Plonil Achusato. And wow, fascinating. And the Gemara goes one step further. Omer Rav Yossi Bar Rebbe. And the same thing. Af Misha Huno Sei Shashena Hogenet Lo. That someone was marrying a woman that they felt this woman is not for him. She's not proper. She's not pious. This is not a proper zivik. Hayu krovim mevim chaviyot ma'alim otam klayot ve'gozim v'sharim, and exactly the same thing. And the kids would go around saying, this man is cutting off his family. When he divorced her finally, they would do it again and announce to the world, this man has come back to his family. He has returned. Now, fascinating. Is this true? What does it mean? It's a poor man breaking off the wrong woman. How can you be sure? All right. But you see, he divorces her afterwards. And it's fascinating. There's a Medrash Rabbah that when a chassid marries a rasha, he becomes a rasha. And when a rasha marries a chassidah, he becomes a chassid. Hakol acharei ha'isha sheshe lefem. Everything, the woman is the boss. She can influence. But you see, Reb Menashe Klein says, we see here that there was a concept. When you break with family tradition, the family breaks with you. If you are such a chutzpah that you sell your family's possessions, their stay achuzah, this is a concept, you know, we see already from the Torah, the difference between a stay mikneh and a stay achuzah. And you marry a woman who embarrasses your family, nikra chas v'chalila poreitz geder, jishchachenu nachash. He's a poreitz geder, may a snake bite him. And this becomes a rabbinic aphorism. And he says the minhag was, they would make a meal and declare at the meal, we are totally cutting him off. He's no part, no longer part of the family. Hayu machlizin shehechrimu oto, v'hotziu oto mea mishpacha, shelo lihitchatein bo, v'lo yitarvu zaroim zareichem. And he goes on, and he's referring to the Gemara in Tuvot, families, you'll see sources, but you see there's a total separation. When you do something that affects the family's reputation, they totally cut you off. And he says, when it comes to the Hasidic world, if chas v'chalila, if someone with this type of yichus, may ish Hasid, mitamidei ha'bal shem tov ha'kadosh, and he comes from the Rabotechem Mamshichei HaGeza, who continues these traditions. And if he stops living this way, and this is so sacred and holy to the rest of the family, it's like they cut him off. They put him in Cherem. And we don't want this to happen to this Chassid with so much yichus going to jail. Don't force him to break with family tradition. All right, this is a statement way beyond Rabbi Revel. Rabbi Revel's letter, as I recall, just dealt with the beard. But here he's going to deal with every aspect of life, as you will see. And it's a very insightful description where a chassid is different than the normative from Jew. What's sad about responsa literature, as we never know the results, did he succeed? Didn't he succeed? If you recall my master's thesis, my MA, on the Cleves Get, so I've often said the Cleves Get is one of the few instances where we know the results, because there was this tremendous, you know, he was accused of being schizophrenic, was the Get good, wasn't the Get good, but we know that they later remarried. And as far as I know, it's one of the few times in the history of Torah that they didn't say bracha, because there was a whole suffix whether they were still married, whether the first get was any good. And he said, Yitzchak said to Leah, Hareat od mikudeshet li b'tabatzu kedat Moshe b'Yisrael. I wish someone could research and we could find out who this was written to, who went to jail. Did Reb Menashe Klein succeed? Did he go to jail with beard, payas, bekasha, strimel for Shabbos, etc.? Right now, I don't know. Okay. All right, first of all, ani modeh la kadosh baruch hu, at least this week we don't have the tension we had a week ago. And I have to tell you, the results are, if you see, I always learned from the Rav. The Rav used to say, if you want to see how successful your ideas are, see what your enemies have to say about them. If you're following what's being said from the progressives, Lo Aleinu, and the left, the hatred, the enmity, Biden and his Jews around him, every leader of the world has contacted Netanyahu outside of Biden. Just think for a minute. Okay, next Tuesday we'll see. This Tuesday is a big day for America. Let's see what the results are. So first of all, Yimodel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it's more than that. See, it shows for the first time the population growth is reflected in the election. And I can tell you as a fact that Ben Gvir got thousands, if not hundreds, if not, I wouldn't even say, maybe even 50, 60, 70,000 votes from the Haredi world. The youth, in other words, some of the youth is not so stupid. They listen to what Rakefet said an hour and a half ago, hits home. And here's a man who's honest, tells you where he stands. And they voted for him. And he also got votes from Chiloniyim. I can tell you, my daughter bunks into this Chiloni, who's working in her house. They're doing shiputzim. Fabulous guy. He says, I voted Ben Gvir. My daughter says, why? He says, look, I saw on the social media, I saw a video of Lieberman and his friends eating chaza and saying we must have choice. Says, I'm not that frum, but I want a Jewish state. I don't want Chaza here. He voted Ben Gvir. So it's fascinating what the results are, and it shows for the first time, see, this is what really causes the problem with the left, that they recognize they're not going to win, not 4 years from now or not 8 years from now. Be'ezrat Hashem. We just have to know how to educate our children. All right, so what did we do today? We're continuing with this medley of interesting tshuva that show the Hasidic world how different it is from our Litvisha world. And you speak about the question of a sonogram, the question of Metzitza B'Peh, and we come to the whole question of meat out of brick. Wow. Reb Menashe Klein, machmir, can't say it's pure halacha, but it's a reflection of the world of Reb Chaim Halberstam, the world of Reb Yecheskel Halberstam, the world of Reb Pnei Menachem, the Ribbitzer, and on and on. It's a Hasidic concept. And now we come right into the heart of it, written under very sad circumstances, to an anonymous lawyer. Rav Menashe Klein doesn't give us his name. If we had the name, we might be able to trace it better. But it's obviously, as we'll see, the son of a Hasidic Rebbe with big, big yichus, and he's going to jail. And Rav Menashe Klein pleads here that the judge or the parole or whoever's in charge, please understand, if he breaks with tradition, it's like he's putting himself in chayrim. Are there any questions? Yomo. Let's all say Yomo. 1, 2, 3. Yomo.
Do you have the link to Rabbi, is it Yosef Mendelevich?
Yeah, you know, yeah, the link, oh, I spoke about that an hour and a half ago, now 40 minutes ago. It's very simple. It's Mendelevich Rakefet on YouTube. Mendelevich Rakefet, you get it immediately.
Okay.
Yeah. Can everyone hears me? But can you speak? No, Yomo has to unmute it. Does anyone know how to unmute it? Well, we're gonna try. Gentlemen, if I would tell you this morning what I've gone through with setting up, and if not for Yomar, I couldn't teach. Everything was taken apart. And,
So unmute.
Yomo, Vic, shake him. We need him. He's getting paid. He can't.
Hold on.
You unmute. We need you. Yomo's coming. Yeah, okay, Nachum, yeah.
Yeah, a couple of things just about, you mentioned Professor Rackover. I dined with him in the morning that on Shabbat they gave him an aliyah because he's got a big milestone birthday coming up. So yeah, he waved them off. He didn't want to make a big deal out of it, but they gave him an aliyah for it.
He's turning 85.
No, 90.
So he's ahead of me. I thought he was, I thought we were more or less the same age. We lived on Berlin when I came in aliyah. He lived on Berlin, right across the street from me. So an Adam Gadol, I mean, you should know that. The Baruch, I come from a big rabbinic family. Okay, how are your parents doing?
They wrote to me. I sent them a Dvar Torah from Rav Bazak about Terach and Avram. Terach was going to Israel and he didn't make it the whole way.
Uh-huh. So, they got the message. Do me a favor, can you give them a link to Yosef and I?
I have it. I'll send it to them. Yeah.
Send it to you. Your mother will know how to do it, right? I know your father.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah. They'll enjoy it.
I just want to, about the bread, what you said. First of all, when you say you didn't make a Suda, you're sort of saying the kid is never, you can't do anything for him. You're saying it was sealed when he was 8 days old and it's done. It's not the...
You mean it's be a Talmud Chacham or not?
Or religious or not. And also when they say this, how can they say, like, you could point to a million Talmud Chachamim who didn't have meat up there at their bread, and you can point to a million people who had meat at their bread who didn't turn out from.
Nachum, I don't know why are you even asking the question. I showed you last week what my dear Talmud, Rabbi Rita, did, the picture of me and the picture of him. And he claims I'm a Shagetz. No, how can you claim that I'm a Shagetz if every Rebbe I had, Rabbi Enkelovitz, Rabbi Fishman, Rabbi Katz, Rabbi Weiss, Rabbi Bunstein, Rabbi Volk, Mori Rebbe Hamuvat the Rav, they all shaved. You're arguing with a Chassid? What's the matter with you? Don't argue with me, argue with him.
No, and if I can say so, when you talk about a guy in jail, do you think that when you write a tshuva like this, do you think it discourages anyone from breaking the law in the future? People see that the Rebbe is going into these efforts, they're thinking, oh, I'm going to, base medr something in, upstate New York, and the Rebbe will write a letter for me. I mean, keeping it pure, eating kosher food is one thing, but to write a whole thing about this without saying he broke the law,
That's probably why Dr. Honig didn't want me to publish what I found with Rabbi Rebel. But I have to tell you, in Israel there's no problem. In the main jails they have a whole frum division, you know that, with a beis medrash, with learning. Now, psychologically they find it's very good that the percentage of returnees, they encourage the prisoners to be bal tshuva. This is the truth. They encourage the prisoners. But again, I agree with you, but this is what's happening. But this is the Hasidic world, and it's a big difference between the Hasidic world and the Rav. Einachinami. Until today, you know what they say about the Rav. He could have been the Gadol Hador, but he went to university. No, he went to university, in my humble opinion, and only made him greater because he had so much broader understanding that it added, that was pretty unbelievable. The knowledge of the world, Shem, in Ohalei Shem, Yefet, Yafta Lekim Liefet, Yishkombi Ohalei Shem, it made the world run greater, but you can't argue with them. That's their viewpoint. And Ad Beit Mashiach Tzidkenu will never have a black and white answer, and Rakefet always says it's where you feel comfortable. I've had students, there's a student just thanked me for remembering it in the 70s, the 90s. I told you the story. It's my student at BMT, and he was corresponding with the Rebbe. And all the other Rebbeim in BMT made fun. What are you getting involved with Chassidus, with Chabad? You know, by the 1970s, Chabad either had followers or detractors. So, and I was the only Rebbe here who encouraged them. He's Makatoiv until today. But it's my Shita. I'm not a Chabadnik. I can't be a Chassid. I have to think on my own. I'm a Talmud of the Rav. But if someone finds themselves at home in Chassidus, the other rabbi. Okay. I would love to know who this is and what finally happened and how much impact the letter of Rabbi Menashe Klein. I can tell you I had impact once. I write about it in Washington. I don't know if I write all the details. But my welcoming me to Maplewood, New Jersey, within a few months of my being there, the New York Times on the front page has an article on the Bashan Company $2 million robbery. And who's arrested? My Levy from my shul. And he goes on and on. Then he's arrested a few weeks later he was printing counterfeit money, and then he's arrested and running a still with the mafia. You know, Newark had a big mafia place. So it's the parole officer who's preparing a recommendation for the judge. And I plead for him, and he comes to shul, and he has a wife and children. Why should... Anyway, when the judge sentences him, he quotes my plea, and he says... I'm sending you for this seven-year sentence, but to run concurrently. In other words, not one after another, but 7 years b'sach hakol. And I did do some good. The end of it, and you should know, he corresponded with me. I think I've told you this. He corresponded with me in Hebrew. And they had to hire the local rabbi to read the Hebrew because they had to censor it. But then when he came up for parole at the end of 7 years... He said, I corresponded to my rabbi and I signed papers, even though I was going in Aliyah. But I signed papers, I'll see you at the next rabbi, he'll come, he'll daven Shabbos, blah, blah. Anyway, he died, he didn't get out, he died in prison, May of 1969, or I believe May, it could be earlier. And that was the funeral, I told you the story, where I eulogized him like Moshe Rabbeinu. He saw the promised land from afar, but he didn't reach it. So his children, his siblings, are whispering behind my back. I don't want to use their language. What a dash the rabbi is. What an idiot. Our brother was a gangster, a disgrace for the family. You know, the Gemara in Kedushin that I just quoted. So I called them over. I said, yeah, I hear you're murmuring against me. Let me ask you a question. I saw the parole sheet on your brother. When did he first have trouble with law? 1942, blah, blah, this, that. I said, tell me, what did he do from 1947 to 1950 or 51? Gee, we don't know. I say to his wife, today his widow, Mildred, come over. His widow at the time. She's not alive today. Mildred, the Chana Levracha. Show them your husband's secret papers. She pulls out his papers. He worked for the Mossad. He was, I think he had the rank of major. He was stationed in Cairo. And they were ready to come in Aliyah. They already bought a Frigidaire and a stove. Because Israel, you didn't have a stove yet. They just cooked on burners and the Palestinian thing to bake a cake at. What was it called? A siapella, it was called in Hebrew, the wonder pot. And at the last minute, he canceled, and he went back to America, and he saw all his friends away ahead of him. He joined the mafia to catch up. Well, these people fainted. When they saw the Mossad papers, they fainted. They couldn't believe it. I said, look, I may be a young rabbi, but I've learned a lot of Talmud already. I'm not that stupid anymore. Oh boy. Just remember in the future, don't be so quick to criticize rabbis. And I wish them well, because in theory, they were right. I sounded like a dummy, like a naive dummy. But Baruch Hashem. All right, are there any other questions?
Yeah. The Hanukkah Rebbe, Meir Kahana would say, he wrote all his best sermon when he was in jail.
Yeah, no.
Right at the beginning of the sermon, they put me in jail for another month, I had time to say, but
correct.
I just went from jail, he bailed me out of jail, that's how they get each
other. I can tell you more about Meir, but let that be. Yeah, Mark.
What year was that?
1995. 1995, Tashna.
I'm wondering if...
By the way, maybe, one second, it may be 1994, because it's Chaye Sara. So it's 1994. Okay.
I'm wondering if possibly my mentor in the Bureau of Prisons, Rabbi Jacob Honig, who's the son of Rabbi Signe Honig, who we had the conversation with, he may... No, he was over 30 years a senior Jewish chaplain.
Check it out. Check it out.
Prison, and he's a chairman of the RCA's Federal Prison Chaplaincy Committee. So he's my he was before I retired my ecclesiastical endorser.
Check it out. Check it out. Write to him. It's again. It's Yud Gimel. Siman Kuflam, Chaylik Yudgimel, Siman Kuflam, Mishnah Halacha. Check it out. Okay, I just want to tell everyone that tomorrow morning we pick up exactly where I left off. You're going to see something very interesting explaining what happened in Hungary compared to Germany and how that influences Satmar. And then we're going to come into Brooklyn and the Tselema, the Lubavitcher, the way it began, and what causes that big split where Satmar throws around cutting off Jews and cutting off families like the Gemara in Ketuvot, like Yerushalmi in Ketuvot. And I don't know if I'll meet you tomorrow, but I'll come right down to a visit to Palm City today, and you'll see what it's like and what it's, because it's different. Things have quieted down. It's not what it used to be, which I might say Baruch Hashem, and it's the two Rebbeim and the whole history and the Rebbetzin, and I'll give you some nice sources. Very fascinating. Okay, I want to thank everyone for participating until we meet again in health and happiness, Das V'Danya, and a special thank you to Yomo, because without him, you have no idea. When I came in this morning, if I may say it, everything was disconnected, and even the converter was gone.
The
adapter, call it what you want. But Baruch Hashem, Yomo put everything together, recovered the Lutiferet. Well, till we meet again, Das V'Danya, tomorrow morning at 9. Bruchim to you, bruchim to you.